That's a wrap on a pretty terrific season. Welcome back into the Ion College Basketball Podcast, the season finale version of the Wednesday podcast with Jeff Goodman and Gary Parrish. So we're going to...
That's the best way you can start this podcast, Norlander? That's a wrap on a pretty good season?
You've had all year to think about how you were going to open the last
final one season,
and that's what you did.
I mean, I think we should start this thing over.
Start it over.
No, I think we have. No, we have started this actually in a very fitting way to not even let me get 8 seconds into the intro before you guys are all up on me.
Man, why are you so tired?
I don't know, guys. I got home and
listen to us. We got a pep. We're ready to cover another Final Four.
Yeah, I wish they were doing another Final Four like right now.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
No,
I don't. Let's do it. I'm going to cover the women's. Oh, yeah, the women's Final Four is over.
Over with.
It is over, yes.
It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast, Matt Norlander. I'm up, like, running around. I feel good about things.
Listen to Parrish, and you're, like, tired.
No, I mean, I'm okay. I'm well rested. I actually slept for 8 hours for the first time in 6 weeks last night, so.
Fatigued, Norlander. You sound extremely fatigued.
No, I'm okay. I'm okay. Yeah, no, that was a pretty good time, huh? That was a pretty good 5 seasons, guy, or 5 weeks, or 5 months.
We did five seasons.
I meant five months of a season. I apologize.
But you know what? It really does. I know this is cliche, but it like flies by. Like you know, like once you get in the middle of it, you just look up and now like it's genuinely over. So. It was a fun season. I think we lacked maybe the true transcendent star of college basketball because even Trey Burke didn't like, you know, people outside of college basketball weren't really spending their days talking about Trey Burke. But a nice tournament with nice storylines. And then the Final Four was actually terrific. Like, you know, we had 3 quality basketball games, which isn't always the case.
Yeah. When was the last time we had a Final Four as good as this one? Because I don't think the title game was obviously really good. Might have been the best game of the tournament. I don't know if it was as good as 08, but I think the Final Four was still better than 08, right? I mean, because we had 3 really close good games. I don't know the last time that we got that final weekend that gave us 3 close and good ones.
I can never remember stuff like this. Like I don't remember 08 except for like I remember the championship game. But I guess what happened in the semifinals? Kansas beat the hell out of Carolina, right?
Yeah.
Memphis beat the hell out of UCLA.
Exactly. So
who are you kidding? You remember that?
Okay, of course I remember that. But I don't remember. Like sometimes people will be like, so it's like, what do you remember about the you know the 2006 championship game? I have no idea. I don't remember a single thing about it. I was there. I don't remember it. So, like, I don't have that kind of memory for whatever reason to, like, compare tournaments to tournaments. But I can remember this one because it just happened, and I remember this one being enjoyable.
And this one will be remembered. I actually think this will be a tournament that is remembered for a few things because you're abnormal in a lot of ways, Parrish, but you're not abnormal like that because as we get further and further away from these tournaments, you don't really remember much. But I do think 10 years from now, we will remember...
Straight abnormal.
Yeah, I know. We'll remember 3 things. Like, we'll still remember Dunk City. We'll remember...
I've already forgotten about Dunk City.
No, of course you have. We'll remember Kevin Ware and how that attaches to the Louisville national title run. And then we'll remember Wichita State to the Final Four. So there are actually 3 distinct things about this tournament.
I think you're wrong. I think here's what you'll remember. I think there'll be 3 things that stand out more than anything else. One, and you got 2 of them. Kevin Ware's injury, Florida Gulf Coast, and the third, I think, is actually Louisville. I think Louisville in general, when, you know, Patino
right.
and all that.
What did you say the third was?
No, I said the third was Wichita State making a Final Four.
I don't think
people are going to remember that. I don't think that's going to be like a – when
it's
I say
– Patino. It's Patino.
No, you know what? Here's the other thing I think people remember. I think people will forever – and the way I define this is by it's 10 years from now and random people, college basketball fans or just casual sports fans are talking as they say, okay, 2013 NCAA tournament. What do you remember? Dunk City. At first, they'll probably go, okay, what year was that? And you go, it's the year that Louisville won Patino's second title overall. They'll go, oh, yeah, the injury. Kevin Ware's broken leg, everybody will remember that. Dunk City, everybody will remember that. I think people are going to remember Spike as well.
No.
Are you out of your mind?
Depends on what...
Listen, you're both wrong. Patino and Louisville are number three, and you can talk about Wichita and Spike all you want. They're going to be, you know, 4-5 or 5-6 or whatever.
People will forever remember the little white zero-star recruit getting 17 in the first half of a title.
I'll never hear about him again, you won't.
Are you... even if you never...
They still lost the game. You're going to remember Patino and Louisville over Spike Albrecht.
My God. Okay, you ready for this? What do you remember about the 1986 World Series?
That's an obvious one.
I don't remember anything about it.
Okay, then shut up for a second. What do you remember about the 86 World Series?
It's obviously Buckner.
Okay, well, here's what Goodman would say. They lost the game.
That's not the same thing. It depends on what Spike Albrecht does for the rest of his career.
Right,
I think.
You're clueless, Parrish.
Almost better if he never does anything else for the rest of his career.
Why do we even have you on this podcast?
Because I have to bring some intelligence to it. Norlander usually is on the
Start bringing some, will you?
What?
Start bringing some intelligence.
If you don't think people will forever remember Spike from that title game, you are at. They'll remember Spike from that title game before they'll remember any one Louisville player.
No, they're going to remember Rick Pitino in Louisville. That's what they're going to remember. They're not going to remember Spike over Pitino in Louisville.
What are you arguing about? Oh, let me explain something to you if I didn't say this already. I'm not trying to suggest that people aren't going to remember that Louisville won the national championship. I'm just telling you, when you talk about the list of memorable things from this tournament, Spike and that performance in the first half of the title game is going to be one of them.
Okay, let's
I'm going to ask you about Spike in 20 years.
Ask him about Spike when we do our July podcast.
When did you start being an anti-white college basketball
That's
player?
That's a great point,
What are you talking about? I just love the game.
You should be all over. I'm surprised you haven't sent a budget item already that says, I'm going to go spend a day with Spike, do a day in the life of Spike. I'm surprised you ain't sent that yet.
Hey,
you know what? I might do that. That's not a bad idea.
Hey, listen, everybody knows you might do that.
Listen, credit to Spike for chasing down Kate Upton. But apparently the Daily News has reported that Kate Upton might be involved with Puff Daddy or P. Diddy, whatever we want to call him.
You're out of your mind? P. Diddy is hitting Kate Upton now?
That's the report. I'm just passing it along, okay?
Have you confirmed this independently?
Daily News reporting that Kate Upton is now dating P. Diddy. So
P. Diddy is 43 years old.
And Kate Upton's, 21, something like that? Yeah, I know. Hey, I'm just passing along, that's all.
Hold on. Push pause on this so we can – let me look this up.
There is no push pause.
Just move on. Let's go. Next thing you know, he's going to be talking about Andy Anfield's wife for 20 minutes.
Oh, boy. Listen, okay, can we just do a quick rewind on the games here? We don't need to talk about Michigan-Syracuse, whatever, Michigan won. I will give some credit here to what will be forgotten is that Wichita State actually got pretty close to making a title game there. They made it interesting against Louisville, and can we give a little bit more credit to the Shockers for doing that? Because this is so easily forgotten, but no one had them even within 10 points. And that game was in doubt down the stretch with a few minutes to go. So credit to for Marshall for having a good game plan there and giving Louisville a good scare. Arguably as much of a scare as Michigan had or gave them in the title game.
No, I'll give
credit to Greg Marshall.
Me too.
I'm not sure Goodman will because he already tried to ruin his final 4 week.
Hold on.
Tell people what you did to Greg Marshall and how you crushed his dream.
I did not crush his dream. I said, quote unquote, I like Greg Marshall. I get along with Greg Marshall, but he's not the most well-liked coach in the industry.
No,
True or false?
We have to set this up correctly.
True or false?
We have to set this up correctly. You went on Dan Patrick's show in advance of the Final Four. And Greg Marshall was scheduled to come on immediately after you. So they naturally, Dan, asked you about Greg Marshall. And you essentially said, he's a good coach, but nobody likes him. Which is
I didn't say it like that.
Okay? So why then they bring on Greg Marshall, but the man has hit the pinnacle of his career, scrapping and clawing and climbing his whole life, and finally he broke through, and finally he's in the Final Four, and finally he can feel like he's one of the elite coaches in the country. And Dan Patrick brings him on and says, we just had Jeff Goodman on. Let me play you a clip of what he said. And now Greg Marshall is stuck there moments, minutes, days before playing in the Final Four, having to listen to another grown man tell the world, that nobody likes him. How off was it? Think about this. Think about if you went on Dan Patrick's show and they said, hey, you know, right? We had Andy Katz on just before you, and we asked him about
Coach K would sound better. Coach K sounds
better. Okay. We had Coach K on, and yeah, you and Andy are buddies now, so I can't even use him anymore.
We are boys.
So they bring on John Calipari, and they say, John, you know, you've known Jeff Goodman for a long time. And John goes, you know what, he's pretty good at his job, but like nobody likes him. He's like the most unlikable writer that there is. Like everybody just talks behind his back and hates his guts. Wouldn't it make you feel sick?
But I know that. I know that to be true. I'm okay. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
So you're basically secure in your social stance within your profession. You're saying Greg Marshall isn't.
No question.
Okay. Okay.
Greg Marshall might be secure. He probably is secure with his.
No, he's not. That broke his heart. You broke his heart. You broke his little shocker heart.
Okay. Well, regardless, ups to them for keeping it close and actually making people think that they were going to knock out Louisville. That was, you know, the semifinals were two pretty good games. Although I will say, like the atmosphere at the Georgia Dome on Saturday was. It was okay. You know, Will Ferrell showed up. That was pretty cool. I guess he was behind Parrish. But Monday was really, I mean, it was really revved in there. Fantastic atmosphere. One of the best games I've ever attended in person, if you want to include, like, you know, style play plus the energy of the crowd. A really, really, really nice feel there. And, it, you know, that first half had the makings of truly an epic. That was some of the best 20 minutes I've ever seen. And then, you know, Louisville was able to control it a little bit down the stretch. Real quick on the refs, because people have made it about them to a certain extent. Yeah. I don't think that the officiating really overshadowed the game. But
Not at all. But
I'm starting to feel that I'm wrong in that because, you know, on my flight home, I'm just, you know, had a few podcasts, listened to a few radio shows, and kind of scanned Twitter, and more people made it about the officiating than I thought. Like, I thought the Trey Burke block was...
Were they Michigan fans?
No, it was just, you know, just people generally speaking. Like, I listened
to... Because they've latched on to this. They've latched on to the whole ref deal, whether it's Ed Rush or previous calls. I don't think the national title game was called that bad, to be honest, at all. I think there were some bad calls both ways. As there normally are. Does the officiating need to get better? Absolutely. To me, again, we've talked about it ad nauseum here. The NCAA needs to look to put forth the money to control the officials, to make them full-time employees, so that they can decide how many games they work and where they work and who they work with, rather than having them do an SEC one game and then a Sun Belt game the next day and, you know, they're all over the place, so they're tired at the end of the year. Even the best refs are missing calls at the end of the year at a more frequent rate because, again, they're tired like Gary Parrish is. Do you think his column was as good off the national title game as the first day of the year? I mean, I would say no.
I think it very clearly was. It clearly was. I actually agree with Goodman here that something needs to be done with officiating, but – I think trying to pretend that the national title game was overshadowed by officiating.
Stupid.
That's not right. Now there was one glaringly bad call that could have potentially changed momentum and maybe the outcome of the game, but I still think the team that actually won was going to win whether you call Trey Burke for a foul or not on that block on Peyton Steven. Now, the semifinals, I do think – I don't want to say dictated because I still think maybe the same teams win, but there were awful calls, in my opinion, awful calls in both semifinal games or awful whistles. I'll put it that way in both semifinal games that were hard to ignore.
Yeah.
But if the kid Baker walked before the tie up,
then call him for a walk. I got no problem with that.
We agree with that, right? We agree.
It appears that he walked. Yes. Then call him for the walk if you want to. But to blow a whistle for a held ball that's not even being held anymore, if you can't blow the whistle but while the ball is actually still being held, then it shouldn't be a held ball.
Yeah, it's a bailout call. Too many refs do it. I hate it. Have a tie-up be an actual tie-up, because what happens in most of those cases is you've got one player that's actually, you know, gains control of the ball and kind of rips it away, and too often we have officials that are just too quick to go to the possession arrow. Very frustrating. As for the...
Stay out of it if you can stay out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
If you can stay out of it, then stay out of it. And like, again, if you can't blow the whistle, by the time you blow the whistle, the ball is already in another player's hands, then you didn't need to blow the whistle. Beyond that, sort of lost in the debate about whether that should have been a held ball or not, is that, you know, minutes earlier there was a double foul called, which just so people understand exactly what that means, it means two officials looked at the same play and saw different fouls.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
They saw different things. So somebody messed up there. And if somebody doesn't mess up there, because when they did, you have to go to the possession arrow. So that kicks the possession arrow back to Michigan's or back to Louisville's way. So if not for the double foul call, even the held ball, if it's called, keeps Wichita State with the possession. But when you combine both of those bad whistles, this is what you get.
Couple more quick things on that title game. The Burke block that got called a foul was too bad, because that was an incredible play. I enjoyed how we had just terrific action. I mean, from the alley-oops to Tim Hardaway to Spike and Hancock, who became the mop, the first one ever off the bench to win Most Outstanding Player. And then Hancock's story just in general, you know, his dad is very sick. He wasn't able to make it to the first two weekends of the tournament. He's from Roanoke. They made the drive down. So that was especially a touching story, a pretty emotional one. But I don't know. I thought in general we got so much from this Final Four after a pretty good year. I don't know if we're going to be able to top it in the next few years here, because it provided us good games, good storylines, and another appropriate champion. Kind of to wrap up on this, Louisville was the number one overall seed. They were the dominant team that people said for so long throughout the season we didn't have. But they were pretty worthy, and no one would have had Hancock playing like this and this well. I thought that was a pretty cool story to it. Anybody?
Well, no. Okay. Hancock, listen, I remember seeing Hancock down in, first of all, let me go back to Patino saying last year that he thought Luke Hancock was his best player. Now, everybody says that about a kid sitting out. But Hancock couldn't make shots when I saw him back in the Bahamas. He had really struggled, and he was kind of their one guy. I mean, think about the rest of their team was not a team full of good shooters. I mean, that's the one thing. Rick Pitino's teams have always been known as teams full of guys that can shoot the ball, and that's what he does. And Luke Hancock was the key to this team in a sense that if he doesn't make shots, look at how teams guard him. Look at how Wichita guarded Louisville. You know, they played pack line and just dared him to make shots from the perimeter. And if Hancock doesn't make shots, that was clearly the key to the game, was clearly in the last few minutes of the first half, with Trey Burke sitting with two fouls. Spike Albrecht was terrific. But at the end of the first half, Hancock goes bananas, hits what, four threes?
Yeah.
And that was the game to me, because if you're holding, you know, you hold them off to 10, 12, 14 points, and then you come out of the second half, first of all, you go into the break with some serious momentum. Game could have been over, because you're not going to do the same thing to Trey Burke in the second half that you did to the Van Fleet kid. Okay.
Gary?
No, I thought, like, people at halftime were talking about, man, Louisville went on a run. In reality, it wasn't Louisville. It was Luke Hancock. He made four threes, hit two free throws. And when they pulled it close there, it was funny, because I think whether you were Rick or John Beilein, you could spin it however you wanted to. In other words, if you're Rick, you say, listen, we just got abused by a zero-star recruit, but we're only a point down. We're fine. But if you're Beilein, I thought you could also say, listen, our National Player of the Year has been on the bench, and we're leading, so we're fine. So I actually think both coaches probably felt okay about things going into the second half, but I do think what Spike did in the first half maybe tempted Beeline to use him more in the second half than he otherwise would have, and he got hurt on the defensive end. They were attacking him over and over again.
And Patino, Goodman wrote about this, but Patino, I mean, not only did he have, honestly, like, the best week in the history of basketball coaches between winning, getting into the Hall of Fame, his horse qualified for the Kentucky Derby, and what he said was the highlight was his son Richard getting the Minnesota job. So, you know, all that stuff in 1 week, just incredible. But just, and then to kind of come back from, you know, I don't want to, he didn't overcome adversity. I mean, he just had the controversy and
the fact that everybody thought his life was, you know, his marriage and his career might be over.
A lot of people thought he should have been fired for the Karen Seifer deal and the affair and the embarrassment on the table for 15 seconds or whatever and in just a short time he becomes
making jokes.
I'm not making jokes. I'm telling you what it was.
Hey, first off, stop making jokes. Secondly, we're not going to start firing people for only 15 seconds. That sounds right. Hey, Norlander, you want to put yourself in that position?
Oh, gosh. This is hey, not...
Hey.
Hey. Okay. Take it easy over there.
You're a grown man.
I mean, we can fire you for wearing those sneakers on the way to and from the arena.
We're going to get to that, okay? Don't worry. I'm leaving you plenty of time.
Let's get to it soon here.
Hey, Norlander, who are you to be making jokes about with you? Who are you to be making jokes about stamina?
I'm not making any jokes. And
are you Mr. Stamina? We don't know about this.
Well, no, you don't know about it. Would you like to know about it?
Thomas.
Let's talk about it for a minute then.
We don't need to talk about that, okay?
How did you get so secure that you can make jokes publicly on a podcast, on a nationally recognized podcast? The way you are. How'd you get so secure in yourself?
Practice. Okay, so as for Michigan and Louisville, going forward, can we just address what they have next year, what people should expect? Because Michigan's in a situation where if this was a team actually 25 years ago, which it's not, but, you know, you would have had everyone coming back, and Michigan probably would have been right there, or at least close with Kentucky in a hypothetical world, which has a ton coming in. But who's leaving for Michigan, and where do we put them in the preseason rankings for next year?
Yeah, we don't know who's leaving. That's part of the problem. We have no idea right now, other than Trey Burke, what Mitch McGarry, what Tim Hardaway, what Glenn Robinson's kid, those three guys are going to do. I would anticipate one of the three, maybe two of the three leave. You know, none of them had great games in the championship game. And Beeline's never dealt with this stuff before, remember. He's never had to deal with this early departure, you know, guys leaving early from his program, really. So it's going to be interesting to see how does he handle this? Because let's face it, John Calipari and Rick Pitino, they know how to handle this thing. They're going to get who they want back that's on the fringe.
Well, Goodman, you had your piece a week and a half ago that actually, you know, you told, you know, in a nice way what guys should do and who should stay, who should go. So address that to the four players in question here for Michigan. Who should stay, who should go, in your opinion?
Now, if I was doing it over again today, obviously Burke gone. We know that. We knew that all year. I would tell Mitch McGarry to go. I think he's a lock first rounder now. Here's a guy who was the number one player in the country 3-4 years ago as a high school junior. Fell kind of not off the map, but you know his stock fell significantly, and now it's back up. And I think Gary would agree with this. You hit it while you can, and Mitch McGarry.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
He would improve. We both know he would improve next year and be ready. You know, what are you laughing at?
Just keep going, keep going, keep going. You didn't even realize what you said. Keep going, keep going.
I did what I said. I'm not listening to it back either, so whatever. Anyway.
15 seconds, keep going.
All right. I'm trying to recompose myself here. I'm trying to remember what I said. Go.
You were talking about Mitch McGarry hitting it while he can.
All right, yeah, I got you. Okay. Gary would agree with that, yes. No. Anyway, you are an idiot. That's all.
I'm sorry. I couldn't stop laughing when you said that. I do, in general, in really most aspects of life, agree with you, Jeff Goodman. You should hit it while you can.
All right, Hardaway?
Hardaway, you know, he's going to go the same place this year that he'll go next year. So honestly, it's whatever he wants to do. He's probably going to be a second rounder either way. Glenn Robinson's kid, I think, should come back. I think he was erratic this year. Terrific potential. Also would go in the first round, but with a really good year, I think he could jump up where he could be a lottery pick, and I don't think he's that right now. So I would say if I'm Robinson, come back. Hardaway, whatever you want to do, either way. I think he'd have an expanded role next year, which he's been looking for the last few years. He'd have the ball in his hands, get a chance to maybe get more comfortable dribbling the basketball, which is, I think, an issue for him. So maybe I'd say Hardaway come back, Robinson come back, McGarry and Burke go.
Okay.
Doesn't Hardaway sort of fall into the same category as Russ Smith? In other words, come back for what? Like, where is Tim Hardaway going to go? Like, where, if you'd like Tim Hardaway now, you're going to like him. If you don't, there's probably not much he can do to make you like him.
He can get better off the bounce where Russ Smith isn't going to grow. He's not going to get a chance to play on the point next year. Hardaway will have the ball in his hands more because they don't have Trey Burke dribbling it for 20 seconds every possession.
Yeah, well, you know
like he could get better.
As for Louisville, you guys have put him as a top five team going into next season. Russ Smith is gone. His dad won't let him come back. Like, regardless, so he leaves as a junior. Steve is a senior. You
know, a lot of people have been sort of mocking that. I actually think it's 100% true. Come back for what?
I hear you. No, I get you. No doubt about it. So he's gone. Steve is gone, and then Zhang, a junior, is got to be gone. So. Louisville, top five team next year despite those losses. Explain to people why.
Go ahead, Gary.
Because of the roster. I mean, you go look at the roster. They're going to bring back, presumably, Bahanan, Luke Hancock, Wayne Blackshear. So three starters, you know, or three of the top six. Montrezl Harrell comes back, you got to think, or you would assume. Yeah. He makes that jump from freshman to sophomore, maybe not star, but certainly all the things are in place for him to be, you know, a high-level future.
He's going to be a stud. He's going to be a stud in terms of what he does in the glass, running the floor. In Pitino's system, playing a lot of minutes, he could be really – he could be a lottery pick.
I think he's a future lottery pick type guy. Kevin Ware should be back. Van Treese is going to take up space in the middle. And then you bring in Chris Jones, a junior college kid. Terry Rozier, I mean, listen, I think initially we thought that Russ Smith would be a part of this, so we were intrigued by the Jones-Rozier-Russ Smith backcourt. That's obviously not going to be now, but still, when I give you a starting lineup that could look something like, I don't know, Chris Jones, Rozier, Luke Hancock, let's go Chris Jones, Wayne Blackshear, Luke Hancock, Bahanan, and Harrell. I mean, that's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
I don't know if Bahanan, it's funny. So earlier in the year, I was at Louisville, Kentucky, and Pitino after the game made some comment. I can't remember the exact nature of it, but it had me thinking, he just said Bahanan's gone after this year. And I went up to, I think somebody, might have even been Kenny Klein in the post game, and said, did he say that? And he was like, yeah. So it was almost like he was forcing Bahanan out. Now we know how often Rick Pitino changes his mind. But it's at that point, he was like, I don't even want Bahanan back.
Huh.
Well, trust me, you want him back. If you're a college basketball coach who enjoys winning, want him back on your team.
And Bahanan's probably, again, he's probably a second rounder. You know, he and Russ Smith aren't going to grow. And that's part of the issue. Bahanan's 6'6". Russ Smith is, I don't even know. Is Russ Smith taller than you, Parrish?
Barely taller.
He ain't 6 feet. He's listed, 6 feet? He is not 6 feet tall.
He's probably 5'10".
Yeah, no, he is definitely a diminutive kid. But, hey, congrats to Louisville to a heck of a run from, you know, meeting Bill Clinton in the Big East tournament to not losing since that 5-overtime game at Notre Dame. They went 16 straight, never changed their starting lineup. They had said, you know, a couple players told me that's a big reason why Hancock was able to have two really good games is that he kind of really got comfortable in that role of coming off the bench and, and being that bit of a spark plug after, you know, he was joking about how everyone hated him in November and December because he just was not hitting shots and was not gelling on the floor all that well, but it all came together for him. And good to Louisville. Now we've got a little bit of an Alabama in football kind of quality where we've got Kentucky winning one year, Louisville winning the next, and in football we had Bama, then Auburn, and then Bama again. I think we might get a repeat of that in college basketball where it'll be Kentucky, Louisville, and then Kentucky again because they're going to be a really good team. But we'll save the Wildcats talk for podcasts down the road. I did want to give you guys a chance to recap our time in Atlanta for the Final Four. We were there for six nights, and you know, good town, right? No New Orleans for sure, but overall, we made the best of it.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. I mean, watching you actually change your shoes.
Come on, Norman.
Tell everybody. I mean, the fact that you're like a woman. You walked to the arena every day in sneakers. And then changed into shoes when you got there. And on the flip side, did the same. Took off your shoes and walked back in your suit and sneakers.
Right. So I'll let the listeners decide if this is some sort of egregious social act. But yeah, so the two times, not every day. So the two times that I went to the games in a suit for Saturday and Monday, instead of walking a mile in dress shoes, I simply put the shoes in my backpack, and I went the Larry David look and walked to the arena in tennis shoes. What's the problem? Bernstein, by the way, Bonnie Bernstein backs up the move. That's all. You know, that's all I need to know.
She's a female.
I don't care.
Oh, listen, if you wanted to use that as an excuse to name drop Bonnie Bernstein, congratulations.
Yeah, you know what? You know how I'm dying to name drop on this podcast.
But beyond that, it's ridiculous. Be a man. Wear your dress shoes.
Okay. Now that's ridiculous. This whole be a man thing. No, of course not. Why would I be a man? That's not my move.
You know what's more ridiculous, though?
Plenty of stuff. Please let us delve into this.
The most ridiculous thing. I thought the best thing we did over the weekend clearly was when we used Gary Parish's credit card to buy lunch. When was that? Monday afternoon.
That was Monday afternoon. But no, that was not the most ridiculous thing.
No, how we got the credit card was ridiculous.
I would ask Parrish to break it down, but he can't remember.
No, he can't remember it.
Doesn't even remember.
I'll break it down. Me and Parrish are at a table in the lobby of the Marriott Marquis, and there's probably about 300 people at the lobby bar.
And at about 2:30 in the morning still.
2:30 in the morning. I had just gotten there maybe an hour before, and Parrish had a few too many glasses of red wine.
I'm not sure that's true. You can't prove that.
I can't confirm that. My sources tell me you had too many glasses of red wine. How's that?
I would need you to – I don't know that that's true.
At the next table.
Define too many. I think probably your definition of too many and my definition of too many are two different things.
That is true. Anyway. Norlander, Borzello, and Rob Doster are at the next table, and they're throwing objects at me and Parrish. They're throwing pen caps?
No. One, someone...
behavior.
Someone had... One of you guys had thrown, like, I don't know, a balled-up napkin at one of us or whatever. So I simply just... I took a pen, and I just, you know, tossed it over, and it end-over-end, slow-motion in the air, it perfectly just... It plunked Parrish in the head. It was a nice little moment there. And so then what happened?
So Parrish is getting
frustrated. What happened?
He got visibly frustrated, and he's got one glass of red wine that's empty in front of him, another one that he's drinking.
So it's not a glass of red wine. It's just a wine glass. Yes.
A wine glass. I'm sorry. And this dumbass decides to take the wine glass and hurl it up in the air at their table. This is not a plastic wine glass. This is a glass. And all of a sudden, it shatters, cutting Matt Norlander.
Here's what happened. So I'm standing there, and I'm trying to talk to Goodman, and like having like a real conversation. I don't even remember what it was about.
We actually were having a real conversation for once.
Yeah, and every time I look at Goodman, somebody hits me in the head with something, like a piece of paper or like a pin top. And then I look, and then I look over, and all you guys are like laughing, and I'm like, all right, it's cool, that's funny, because I like to throw things too, so it's fine. And then I start talking to Goodman, get hit again immediately. I'm like, all right. Like, after a while, it becomes frustrating. And I keep looking at the table, and you guys are having so much fun. And in my head somewhere, it clicked. I'm like, you know, all right, you guys want to throw things at each other?
Okay.
Let's throw things then. Like, you want to play this game? Like if you, I won't start this game, but if you want to play the let's throw things at each other game, let's play it. And so I take my wine glass. I hope people can see this. I threw it essentially like it was a cornhole bag.
Yes.
Just tossed it into the air as if I were playing cornhole, and really like a perfect shot where it would land right in the middle of your guys' table and then shatter like a grenade. Although I'm not sure grenades shatter, but you get the point. It was essentially like I threw a wine glass grenade at your table, and it hit perfectly, and it shattered everywhere. And in a span of about 2 seconds, I went from, man, that was awesome, to this.
What the hell did I do?
Damn, I just threw a wine glass straight across the bar. Like, what is wrong with me? And I actually like them, because you can get kicked out of places for stuff like that, right? And that's not usually my, I don't usually like, I'm not the like thrower of things. Like, I'm usually like the just, I don't know why it occurred to me that that might be a good idea. And it almost immediately occurred to me that, oh Lord, they're going to walk over here and throw me. I'm going to get thrown out of my own hotel bar for throwing a wine glass grenade at Norlander's table. So I would like to, on behalf of CBSSports.com, apologize to the Marriott Marquis for smashing one of their wine glasses.
Yeah, surprisingly, the stat, like, it shattered, and then, you know, when that happens, everyone kind of stops what they're doing and looks for where it came from, and that kind of happened. It was awkward for a few seconds, but the staff, there was no reaction. They were just kind of like, this happens on the regular. So Parrish, of course,
they knew
gets away with it. I know, Parrish gets away with everything, so there's no shock there. But yeah, dude, you really almost got me. It was.
That's when we stole his credit card. That's when we stole his wallet.
Then he loses. So then he loses his wallet, which, by the way, his wallet is, it looks like Bible scripture, because it's like this leather bound iPhone case / wallet thing, which is actually, it's like a brilliant invention. Whoever invented it's probably a millionaire by now. But so it's like sitting there on like an elevated ledge, and for a good 5 minutes. He's looking all over for this thing.
Everywhere.
And
you had it in his hand, Parrish.
No, I did not have it. I put it down on the ledge.
Norlander, you're a liar. Matt Norlander, you're lying to me.
I am not lying to you. I didn't.
Norlander.
Yes.
Stop lying to me. It is okay. 15. Listen. It's okay. I don't mind that you stole my wallet and hid it from me.
No, we're not going to do that. I didn't steal your wallet.
Matt Norlander?
Not even 15 seconds was this thing on my person.
Matt Norlander, lower your voice.
I can't believe you're lying, Norlander.
Lower your voice. I do not mind that you hid my wallet from me, because that's something that I would almost certainly do to you as well. I can't be mad at you about it, but I will not.
Stand
up. I will not tolerate you sitting here and lying to me on this podcast.
No, there's not going to be any lying, because I didn't withhold your wallet from you. That's just how the story goes.
At Norlander, did your hands touch my wallet?
That's not the story.
Did your hands touch my wallet?
They did. Goodman's hands also touched your wallet, and Borzello's hands also touched your wallet.
Listen, I've already admitted I did it. I got no problem saying
I'm not saying I didn't do it. I'm just saying I wasn't the one withholding it for the majority of the time.
Matt Norlander.
And I'm not the one that took the credit card.
Matt Norlander, do not lie to me. Lie to me.
There is no lying. Hey, listen, I also appreciated the Waffle House rendezvous at 4:15 in the morning when you guys were doing your top 25-1. That was just some serious grinding out of both of you.
Tell them what Goodman did to the waitress.
Oh, you're just going to walk out without tipping this woman.
Listen,
4:15 in the morning at a Waffle House in downtown Atlanta. Think about the crowd you're dealing with. Goodman tries to walk out without tipping.
This poor lady, she must have been 60.
No, she was like mid-40s.
But in real, like, in actual, like, lived a hard life years.
Yes,
she's 60.
Oh, that's not nice.
Okay, she'd gone through it, right? And imagine you look up at that age, and you are having to deal with it at 4 a.m. on a weeknight, countless just drunk idiots who've just been to a basketball game. So by definition, if they've been able to travel to your city and pay the money to attend a basketball game, they've probably been living at least a more, how do we say this properly, a happier life, if those are the types of things that make you happy. In other words, they ain't on the grind trying to take people's omelet orders at 4 a.m. on a weeknight, right? And yet she does this with the biggest smile on her face. Yeah.
She was the nicest woman ever.
She was the nicest woman ever. If anybody ever had a reason to hate them their lives, it would be in the middle of a Monday night dealing with thousands of drunk basketball fans as they yell at you, "Did you get jalapenos on my hash browns? Why aren't there jalapenos in my hash browns?" Right? So this, and yet this lady, all she was the sweetest, happiest, most enthusiastic lady I've ever met in my entire life. Goodman gets up at the table to say he's going to go pay the bill, which was kind of him considering he'd just stolen $120 from me 8 hours earlier. And so I'm the last one to pack my stuff up, and I'm walking out, and this lady comes running over at me. She's, "Excuse me, what about the tip? Did you leave the tip on the table?" And I'm like, "What do you mean? Like my boy paid for it up at the register." She's like, "Yeah, but he didn't put no tip on the table." And I'm like, "Oh, don't tell me. There's no way he didn't put a tip on the credit card receipt. Show me that credit card receipt." She showed me, because I had already seen the credit card receipt earlier today when you had used my credit card and you didn't have any problem dropping
tip on that. Well, with your credit card.
So I have to reel Goodman back into the Waffle House and make him look at this sweet lady right in the eyes. And he was like, "Oh, it's late. I must have forgot." Get out of here with that. You're lying like Norlander lies.
Brutal.
I gave her a $10 tip for a $30 bill.
Just brutal. That lady
deserved more than you gave her, Jeff Goodman.
More than 10 bucks?
You gave her zero. You were halfway back to the Marriott Marquis before I had her.
God, I thought you were going to tip. I thought Norlander was going to tip after getting a free meal from everybody. I mean, Norlander doesn't pay for a thing. He never reaches in his pocket. I've never seen anybody.
That ain't true. And I paid for it. No. That ain't true at all. Okay. You're just never. It sounds so terrible. But you're never around when I'm paying for everything. I did every cab ride I took with any other writer in Atlanta, I paid for, except when Borzello made me wait, so I made
Matt
him pay.
Norlander, Matt, how about this? When Matt Norlander, you ready? When we valet parked the car.
I was getting there. That's what we're, you want to go, just go into it right now?
When we valet parked the car at the W, Matt Norlander was driving, right? And so the driver is the person that the valet goes to, because why wouldn't you? The driver has the keys. The driver has the tip. Norlander stood there like a bumbling idiot waiting for me.
I had no cash on me.
Oh,
he says that every time.
Every time. I got no cash. Hey, can you get this? I don't have any cash. Why don't you ever have any cash?
I pay for the wedding.
I do. I am in trouble. I got this wedding in 3 weeks, man.
That's what it is. I got no cash.
I'm eating ramen for the next 3 weeks to pull off this whole deal here. And Parrish,
I'm like getting into the bar. Like, I'm already halfway in the hotel. Norlander standing there like, Oh, he even pointed at me. This is actually his car. It's not my car.
Damn straight.
Oh, wow. Dude,
you're driving. Tip the valet, for crying out loud. Don't, like, turn this into a whole exercise. Where, like, one guy gets the keys, and one guy has to give the tip, and another guy's got to do something else.
What else have we forgotten about?
The last thing we're going to get to is, so this would have been Thursday night. We went to the Intersport party. And, I mean, that was whatever, you know. But as we leave,
Whatever? Suddenly you're too good for the Intersport party?
No, I'm glossing. No. I'm glossing. There was nothing of note that happened at the
back next year.
Hey.
We get you to the Intersport party, and now you're ripping it.
All right, there's nothing of note that happened at the Intersport party.
He used to beg us, do you think you can get me in the Intersport party? Please, you got to get me into the Intersport party.
Lie.
And now you're like, whatever. The Intersport party was whatever. Hey, okay, fine. Hey, don't go next year then.
Would you say the Intersport party was whatever this year?
I would say, hey, I'm appreciative any time a company.
Okay, it was a fine time, but the point is, as
it was
a good evening and a fine time, and as we're leaving,
you don't have to go then. You don't have to go. Listen, I'm sure Intersport's
a fine time. Come on.
It's just so everyone listening realizes this is basically what I go through
to how
every
far
single
you've
final
come,
four.
Norlander. Once upon a time, you were writing for an independent blog who you just kill to even be at the final four. And then just like this, you're like, "Oh, I'm Mr. CBS now. The Intersport party's okay, I guess. I could take it or leave it." Look at you. Look at yourself in the mirror.
Amazing.
What happened to you?
This is what I go through. I mean, this is basically my life.
It's the ego. I mean, inflated. Well, like Borzello. Hey, Borzello would never say it was fine.
For the purposes of the storytelling, which we've extended far too long here, there was nothing of note that happened at the Intersport party until we left on the massive freight elevator. Okay, whatever. On the massive freight elevator, when Parrish basically thought that Julio Jones, star NFL wide receiver for the Atlanta Falcons, was Jordaire Jett, who plays guard for the St. Louis Billikens.
That's a misrepresentation of
That is not a misrepresentation, because one, you started rapping lyrics I can't repeat on the podcast to Julio Jones in the elevator, and then we went down to get the car at valet, and you pointed and said, "Who is that? Is that Jordaire Jett?" And it's Julio Jones. They look nothing alike, dude. They don't.
100%.
Jordaire Jett and Julio Jones. Good job.
Who else was there? Roddy White was there as well, right?
Roddy White was there as well, and he's actually at least closer, but
here's what happened. All the stuff about rapping in the elevator to Roddy White and Julio Jones, that's true. I have to plead guilty to that. But somebody asked me outside. It wasn't like I just started volunteering, like, there's Jordaire Jett. Somebody asked me, who is that? And for whatever reason, Jordaire Jett's name popped into my head, so I just said that.
And then we all pile, like, eight of us into so Parrish's wife actually drove from Memphis down to Atlanta, so they had their SUV. And I was, of course, in charge of driving, because I'm the only responsible one of this whole damn group. And so we go from one party to the next. Goodman gets us lost in the middle of frickin' Atlanta, or wherever, Buckhead, but that was just, who knows where we were. But eventually we get to the second party we were going to, and we were going to park in the back, and it was valet, and, you know, it was raining outside, and for whatever reason, Parrish finds this hilarious, but I rolled down the window, and I just said, good evening, and
that's how you said it. Good evening.
I said good evening, and then
you sounded like Count Chocula.
I was living in a castle, and but to Parrish in the back of this SUV, he lost it. He was done sitting back there with his wife and Borzello, making for such a terrific threesome back there. But we eventually
the Intersport party. It was okay, I guess.
And then, so we go into this other party, and it was fine.
Again, you're ripping parties.
Not ripping parties.
Listen, I hope that everybody related to the party scene at the Final Four is listening to this right now, and I hope they understand that they should use their invitations, that these invitations that are cherished and desirable. That they should use their invitations on people who will actually appreciate what it is they do.
The point is, again, nothing of note happened at the party except that we lost you, and we didn't want to leave without you, but we called you, we texted you, we couldn't find you. We go back to your car.
I was enjoying the party. I wasn't sitting around being jaded, sitting around being unappreciative. I was like, we're at a party. I'm going to enjoy this party.
So we go to the car. We didn't end up valeting. We parked free off side street, like a block and a half away, and we drive back to the front of the building. And all of a sudden, Parrish just appears out of nowhere. He materializes out of thin air, and he's there with his wife, and we're trying to get him into the car again, the trunk of the SUV. Meanwhile, there's a cop right there, so I have to like pull away in the middle of the street. It's like 3 a.m.
You gotta pull away without me. You almost killed me.
I know.
I was trying to get back in the car, and you're pulling away.
You were so mad. Anyway, it was a good time. Hey, I love you guys.
That's fine. Hey, listen. Next year, we'll just have you drop us off at the parties.
Oh, okay. That's how we're going to do it?
Then you well, like, listen.
Man, hey. You don't care.
I do care. I enjoyed myself. But for the purposes of storytelling on the podcast, there was nothing that happened at either one of those parties that was worth.
There was plenty that happened. We met nice people.
We can reach that. You know what we'll do? Here's what we'll do. Once upon a time, we reached down to the independent blogger section of college basketball, and we pulled you up. We pulled you up, and we
I'm all too aware, and I'm forever appreciative.
And we made you a part of us, and already you're jaded. So maybe we just need to reach down again. Maybe we need to reach down and find somebody that's got a fresh approach, somebody that's appreciative. Like, what's that little Alex Klein kid doing? Wonder if he wants to go.
What is Alex Klein doing?
Wonder if he wants to go to the Intersport party next year.
He breaks scoops.
He gets scoops. I bet he can put together a non-BCS.
He's got better hair than you, too.
Wow. We are really going low blows here on a season-ending podcast. This is how we end it. Like this
we'll find somebody who will appreciate that invitation, not only the way they should, but the way you used to.
Wow. No.
Before that next podcast, we want you to reevaluate yourself.
Reevaluate yourself and write a letter of apology to Intersport.
And to Intersport and to us.
And to us and to the Pump Brothers.
For the $75 you lost, David Pump.
Okay. Well, that was another interesting one, but we won't get into that awkwardness at the Final Four. But anyway, hey, listen, I appreciate you guys burying the crap out of me as always. There is no better way to wrap up the season podcast than what just basically happened over the past 20 minutes. So,
Lander, you have to listen. I don't want you, because I've seen this happen to other people. I've seen it happen to me, where you look up and you're at a place you always dreamed about maybe being one day, and then you're suddenly unappreciative of that place.
Never unappreciative of that.
Sounds like it.
There was a time when we could have taken you to the Intersport party at the Final Four. And
I had a good time. I enjoyed the party. I had a good time. I enjoyed myself. I was thankful and appreciative.
If you had said that at the beginning,
yeah,
y'all would have been fine. Yeah. But tell now, that is not sincere, Matt.
Have become, let me tell you who you've become. Just so when you click.
You know who he's become, Gary?
Oh,
Mike Lupica.
You've become Mike Lupica. You're like the Mike Lupica of bloggers.
Stop it.
You don't appreciate it anymore. Like Mike Lupica at the Final Four complaining about a seat. I guarantee you there was a time when a young, still probably the same size, but a young Mike Lupica kid, like there was a kid, like a 13-year-old Mike Lupica, basically the same size, but 13. And if you'd have said, man, one day you're going to be at the Final Four, he'd have said, get out of here. I'll be at the Final Four. And fast forward, and what is he doing? Raising hell with people who've got nothing to do with assigning seats at the Final Four, just berating them. And when I look at you now, Matt Norlander, I see that you seem to be, you appear to be, on that same path, except tall.
Well, much
You've
taller.
You've got me picturing a 13-year-old Mike Lupica absolutely crushing somebody right now.
Gary's hosting Leadoff all this week. It's It's at midnight on CBS Sports Network from California, which is where he's coming to us from now. And be sure to watch that. I appreciate you having me on your radio show last week, GP. It was a good time.
No, let me say, listen, you were nice to do that, and you really are a gentle-hearted, like the sweetest man that I know. All right, wow. And you're a nice human being.
Just get back to that guy. I want to see that guy again.
Don't forget who you are.
I'll try not to, but I will. I will say, like the one or two times I decide to actually bring the knives back out and go back at these guys, it's like whoa, stop, hold the phone. What's going on here? It's like no, I'm not allowed to. I'm not allowed to even step that way. So. I guess I got to know my role and keep it simple, keep it humble. I guess I can do that.
Well, you start out the podcast like bragging about how much stamina you have.
Led me down that. You asked me how, and then we're not getting to this. That's it. That's the podcast. We're done. Hey, you guys are coming to the wedding, right? I mean, I'm gonna see you there. Right?
We're gonna talk about this off podcast.
I knew it. You're going to bail on the wedding? Are you kidding me? This is the one day you won't be able to come back at me. And, of course, you're not gonna be able to do it.
I'm still undecided.
Yeah.
I have to find out about this. My daughter is in a show that day. I found out last week, so I got to find out if it's more than one day or just one performance. So I will let you know on the wedding here in the next probably few days.
I know Borzello's good for it, so you know.
I have to go to the Intersport party.
Yeah, exactly. I know that's coming.
There's an Intersport party that weekend.
I hope everyone has enjoyed our Wednesday podcast throughout the season. We'll do the occasional one in the off season one or two times as issues warrant it, and we head toward you know, the middle of summer. But thanks, guys. Appreciate it so much. We'll still be going consistently on the Ion College Basketball blog. Check in there often. Follow these guys at Goodman CBS, at Gary Parrish CBS. The Avatar bet is over, and so Goodman has free reign over his image once again. And I believe Parrish is still
Wait.
Up on...
No. The count is...
This was Goodman's big thing for the Final Four, by the way. Forget the storylines. Does he have more followers than Parrish on Twitter?
Parrish, you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
You have 63,904 followers at last check, which is, by my count, 96 followers shy of 64,000. Do the math. I have 64,012 followers. I have now left you in the dust.
Oh, wow. Well, listen, congratulations, because I know how consumed you were by this.
Completely. That's and all
so,
that?
So I'm actually happy for you.
Now I just need to get my cloud score up.
Your cloud score is still, like I don't want to say you should be embarrassed. I'm just saying I would be embarrassed.
Okay. All right. That's a wrap. Follow these guys. We'll talk to you soon. And we'll have one more wrap-up podcast on Friday. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you then.